I'm talking today with Nigel Burgoyne, who is the Artistic Director of Ballet Theater of Toledo. Also, David Jex, who is a wonderful composer that has been on the program before. In fact, you both have talked with me before on the air. Mm-hmm. And we are talking about a brand new world premiere ballet that the two of you have somehow created. I want to find out how you make a ballet, first of all. But it's called A Night Before Christmas at the Museum. So there's a lot of artwork tied into this. I wonder, let's start with you, Nigel, and just tell us how the story came to life in your mind.
Right. I put in the program, actually, to let the audience know, because it is quite awkward. How do you come up with a ballet just like that? Well, when I was younger, maybe once a month or once every 3 months, I would be taken up to London by my mother, and I would take class with a fabulous teacher called Nesta Brooking. My reward after that was to go to the Natural History Museum in London. Mm. Oh, my goodness. I just loved that place. I would wander around and look at all of those things. And then we had like a 3-hour train ride back and then a mile and a half walk to our house across the fields. And during that time, my mind would come to life, all of the creatures that I saw in it, all of the different places, you know, Egypt and things like that. And my mind would just spring up because there were no telephones or no cell phones or computers.
You had to amuse yourself.
I had to amuse myself. Yeah. And that was always in my mind. And I was thinking I'd love to do something new this year with some my very talented dancers. They're lovely individual characters. And I was sitting and I was looking out the window, and there on our table, on the coffee table, is a statue that I gave my lovely wife Anne-Marie 25 years ago of Degas' Little Dancer. Mm. And I kept looking at this statue and I went, what if it came to life? Yeah. And then I put the story around it about the little girl Florence that comes to the museum, finds a statue. And Florence must have some magic about her, because all of a sudden this statue comes to life and brings paintings and statues to life for her. And then she's entertained by these different statues and paintings.
Yeah, it's a really interesting, lovely story, and full of nostalgia and full of Christmassy type feelings.
Exactly. And I really like the movie and the Night at the Museum. I thought that was a super idea as well. But this one, we have every single fabulous work of art in our own museum.
Yeah.
Just down the road. So why not use it? It's beautiful.
That's wonderful. So you began thinking about this ballet. When did you and how did you bring David into it as the composer?
Well, we've worked together on quite a few productions now, haven't we?
It's been a few, yes.
And with this one, I had to think, what am I going to do now? I want the audience to travel around the world. Mm-hmm. So we have dances from India, we have them from France, we have them from Egypt, and we have one from Lake Erie.
right up there.
The Commodore Egypt Perry. And, yeah. So what I did was listen to a lot of my, you know, favorite music that I think would fit the painting. You know, is my version. And then with not only fitting the painting, it's got to fit the choreography as well.
Right.
I want something like, for example, the Commodore Perry is going to be a couple of sailors dancing. So I want a lively hornpipe.
And you have a ship.
A ship is going to come on, and Commodore Perry will be on that ship.
Wow.
And the first Commodore Perry will be Chris Vickers from Channel 11. Mm-hmm. And the second Commodore Perry will be Ron Koch, who is the musical director for the Sylvania Community Orchestra.
Making a cameo appearance.
A cameo appearance, yeah. As him, yeah. And then we've, you know, something nice and steady and mysterious for Queen Nefertiti and the Mummy.
Yeah.
You know, here we have a mummy dancing on stage.
Can't exactly have a can-can with the
no,
mummy.
No, you can't.
David, let's hear from you. I mean, what was your first thought when Nigel presented you with this idea?
Oh, I said yes right away. yeah, a number of years ago, I was commissioned by Masterworks to compose a piece for the crowning of St. Catherine, the Rubens in the museum.
Right.
And I really enjoyed it because I'm not necessarily a visual person. I mean, musicians, you know, are oral people. But when we have something like that in mind, and the diversity of all the things that Nigel has selected, it's a usually in a ballet, you've got a little more flow as to what the style and the character of the piece is. But this is, again, very diverse.
Yeah. Well, did you have you written a ballet before?
Yes, we have produced Beauty and the Beast most recently.
We did Beauty and the Beast. We did Mima the Lima becomes a ballerina.
Your children's book, yes.
My children's book that I wrote. We also did The Great Pancake Escape, which David wrote, which will be actually appearing in March this year. And we did The Ugly Duckling as well.
We've had a lot of fun.
So you've got a few ballets under your belt, so to speak.
We're pretty good partners.
Well, I should mention that this is happening November 10th at 7 p.m., November 11th at 2 p.m. at the Valentine Theater. You can find more information all about the new world premiere ballet at ballettheaterofToledo.org, or you can call up at 419-242-2787. I think it's a lovely idea, and I especially like how you've tied the whole world of art into it. I downloaded the scavenger hunt, and it asks you to first of all, it lists the 9 portraits here from the museum, but it also asks you to draw your own version of a portrait. And as you'll see, I drew a white cow in a snowstorm. I didn't add to it because I'm such a terrible artist. But it's a really interesting idea. I wonder if you can talk first about this little dancer by Degas that inspired you. If you could talk about the work of art itself, because it's kind of unusual.
Right. But Degas was, you know, we call him the prince of ballet paintings and sculptors as well. And this is actually a 14-year-old girl preparing, you know, for ballet. And I believe she was in the corps de ballet. She was a corps de ballet. Her mother was a cleaner or something like that. And this piece, I've always thought she's so elegant. And what is unusual about this type of balletic statue, she's looking upwards. Mm-hmm. She's looking up to the stars. She wants to become a prima ballerina. And I believe it was something when he was sculpting the actual statue, something went in the neck, so he had to move the head up a bit. But I've always thought, whenever I look at it, she's looking up, because dancers always look level. If you look up and try and spin, you fall over backwards. But she's standing still and her eyes are going up, and I've always interpreted it as she is looking up into the stars and she's looking up into a future in dance.
It's interesting. It has some kind of kinship with the Egyptian and the Indian art that is involved in there as well.
Right. And with the statue of Parvati, there's a leading girl, and we've actually got some of the Poonan dancers have come to join us. They're from the group, the Poonan Dance Group, and they do traditional Indian dance, so I've blended that in with one of my balletic dancers as well.
Yeah. David, let's get back to you. So how much music did you write for this piece in total?
I haven't totaled it. I believe we're over 40, 45 minutes of actual sounding music now.
Yeah. Now, how does that work? Do you just take the idea and run with it? Is it divided into scenes, I assume, and you had a theme for each scene?
Each portrait comes up in an order, and Nigel only changed that order once. I think
I only changed it once, yes.
Added a couple pieces.
Yeah.
I was curious about your collaboration,
We check on things, and I ask him to describe what he has in mind, and I send him something, and we've been pretty successful with that process.
Go from there.
What is wonderful, this is the day and age, that I can get a link of a piece of music that I like. For example, Kekachurian's Masquerade, one of my favorite pieces of music. And I would say, David, could I have a grand waltz similar? He wouldn't copy it, but similar to this style and this feel and this mode.
Yeah.
And then he would just work on his computer and send me a computerized version. I mean, imagine in the old days, you had to write it all down.
Yeah.
The pianist had to play it. Then you had to orchestrate it. He does it right away, you know.
Yeah. Well, you two have done this together for some time, so you have the... the process well in hand. What you describe is similar to what some directors do in the medium of film. Mm-hmm. They choose music that sort of fits what the mood is at the time, and they go to their composer and they say, give me something like this, and then that's what they get.
Right. And what's been fabulous about working with David, I've never had to say, no, I don't like it.
Yeah.
He's always sent me something that is so interesting and so creative. And what is fabulous as well, we've got two things, watching the dancers' faces as I play it for the first time, because they've never heard this music. It's brand new. And they look at it, look at me, and then I say, okay, these are the steps we're going to do. Now, we're very fortunate in our studios over in Holland that we have a stretch area, which is quite big, and we do a dress rehearsal in the studios. But the first is a run-through, so David brings all of his magicians.
They're magicians.
Musicians. He brings his musicians in, and we sit down, and they play it, and all of the dancers sit around. So they can see, because normally when you do a rehearsal, you can't look down in the pit and look at the orchestra.
Yeah.
Now you can sit, and David wonderfully says, now in this section here, I'm using this instrument, and I'm using that, and that brings out this. And we do have some of our students that are studying music, and they're watching close up the musicians playing. And then once they've listened to it, we all go next door into the studio, and David plays it again, and we dance to it.
Well, that's part of the process, too. I mean, I have the two of you here, but also the really important component are the dancers.
Yes.
And how they view the piece and how they make it a part of their expression as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's wonderful that you concentrate on the music a little bit and introduce it to them that way.
And I see a lot of pride in our students, knowing that this is a piece that is being molded and built on them.
Okay.
They are the very first people to be originals in this production.
Did you have specific people in mind when you wrote the ballet?
Yes. Yeah. I see when I teach class every day, I look at students and she's doing this. And there's another one for The Thinker, for Rodin's Thinker. He has a young lady who brings him onto the stage and he sits and thinks, well, we've got one girl who just... she's got a very nice atmosphere about her, but she's a thinker as well. In class, she thinks about the exercises, and I thought, she's going to be perfect for the thinker.
Yeah. Well, it's remarkable that all of these wonderful works of art are in our own art museum. Have you been in touch with them? I mean,
they
know all about it.
They've been fantastic. We've been collaborating with them, and we're working on something as well when they do their flashlight tours. Later on in December, we'll probably go back and do something there with them.
That's great. Well, you mentioned, David, that you have a process where you provide music to Nigel, and I know that you send like electronic versions. I have one of those electronic versions. I just want to play it so people get their ears wrapped around the kind of musical language that you use in this piece. Yeah. So I wonder if you can maybe set it up for us. This is from At the Fair, is the title of the work.
Yeah, this is an MP3 of the music software version of At the Fair, and it's bright and cheerful, and it is reminiscent of perhaps, you know, At the Fair of the Petrushka.
Oh, yeah.
Or those types of fun things we were talking about, what we'd want. And when you find the painting at the museum, I hope everybody does, go find these. Why, it's bright and active, and hopefully you'll catch some of that in the music.
Thank you.
like that rendition. You guys are laughing. You're smiling right now. But it's beautiful music. You can cut through the electronic, you know, noise and hear the music and hear it like flutes and a violin and all these different instruments that come to life.
And much easier to dance to than Stravinsky.
Although I do, I hear a little bit of that Shrovetide Fair kind of sound, especially at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Stravinsky is obviously an influence on you, David. I mean, were there other composers that you looked to when it comes to writing for the stage like this?
Well, the great ballet composers, of course. Yeah. You just let them play and let them kind of work in the background of your mind. Tchaikovsky, the great Russians.
Yeah.
Such good composers. But there's some good English composers, too.
Oh, yes. Nice bit of Elgar in there.
Yes. Indeed. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the educational efforts that are tied into this production, because education is a major part of what you do. I know there's a teacher's guide for this. There's a student performance. Can you tell us about that?
Right. There will be a student performance at 10 o'clock on Friday the 10th. And what we're doing with this scavenger hunt, we're really sort of encouraging families to either come and see the show first and then go to the museum and do the scavenger hunt, or go to the museum and then come and see the performance later. To see a work of art come to life, I think, is rather... It's opening children's minds to that beautiful painting or that fabulous statue, which was so still, is now ethereally moving around the stage and making your heart swell up as you see the emotion that's coming from something that's always been static. So I think that plays a great deal in children's minds. It's one of those things, and it seems very strange analogy, but children watch cartoons which have very little words in them but a lot of action. And it keeps them quiet. It's the same thing with ballet. There's no words, there's fabulous music, and there's beautiful movement. And that really, when a child is sitting there and taking all of that cultural artistry into their minds and their souls and their bodies, that to me is one of the most fabulous things, because it's going to affect children. They're going to turn around and later on go to the museum and say, oh my goodness, I saw that and it was beautiful. And the music to it goes, da 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 da. And it's by David Jecks.
Much better than the electronic version, I have to
exactly,
say.
Exactly.
Oh, you guys haven't heard my piano version. It actually starts with paper and pencil at the piano. That's my generation.
That's your process? So how do you transfer it electronically then? You play it into a system, or how does that work for you?
You enter it with a keypad and a mouse.
It's almost as slow as a pencil.
It really is almost as slow.
It's
a wonderful creative process. We have a great time.
And I think the thing is as well, I'm inspired by these fabulous pieces of artwork. David's inspired. The dancers are inspired as well. So you've got a triple inspiration here.
Well, you have this study guide, this scavenger hunt available at the website at ballettheatreoftoledo.org. These performances are November 10th at 7 p.m., November 11th at 2 p.m. at the Valentine Theater, and you mentioned the student performance, the school performance, is Friday, November 10th at 10 o'clock a.m., also at the Valentine Theater. I wonder if you could just talk briefly about the setting and the costumes and how all of that fits into your idea here.
Right, we have a fabulous costume maker, Pam McCrae, and obviously this one's very easy because I sent her the original paintings, but then she had to come into the studio and see what the movement was. Because if it was too big, then the girl couldn't be partnered, or if it was too small, there'd be no movement. So she had to come and watch the choreography, and then we talked about different materials. I have to mention lighting as well. I don't want that too bright, because once the lights hit it, it's going to bounce everywhere. A lot of areas where the choreography is so important that the costume is then displayed beautifully and blends with the movement.
And also looks like the art exactly, that it was inspired by.
Exactly, exactly. Sometimes we can't be exactly because we have to do movement, you know.
Well, all those factors are things that I think the general public does not think about.
Exactly. it's a lot of thought that we have to go into, and that's why we have The Rock for the Thinker. One of our fantastic teachers, Beth Hyder, has made a rock that the thinker comes on, and we work on it in the studio, because when you come and see the show, you'll see the different areas that the thinker is actually thinking about. So you'll see that. But he has to sit on that rock because it's the classic. You know, he can't just walk around.
Well, the one that is in the Toledo Museum of Art, The Thinker, there are lots of different castings of The Thinker. But it's interesting. I read something on their website about the artist saying, Rodin saying that he's thinking with everything, with his entire body. And I just never thought of that before. Right. I was thinking, you know, that he was thinking with his head and his arm, right? But no, it's you see that tension there.
And he actually modeled it on a boxer. It was a boxer that was the model. We have one of our former students has come back, and he's doing a wonderful job of the thinker. He just sits there and poses beautifully. If I could I just mention that this has all been made possible by a fantastic sponsor, Donna Bogan, from the company of Hartman and Bogan. She has stood by us and made sure that we go forward and present these fantastic productions for the community.
Yeah, so that's wonderful. Well, very important that we have people who support us.
Exactly, exactly.
So, David, let me ask you more about the music and the musicians. These are actual live people that are going to be performing your music, right?
Just like the dancers are live, we have some local professional musicians who have been playing for our ballet company for several seasons now, and they do a wonderful job of bringing these to life.
Yeah. Now, when you're writing this music, you obviously have specific performers in mind, the same way that Nigel was thinking of specific dancers.
I can count on a couple key people, like Robert Duras is our keyboardist, and he can perform. He uses an electronic keyboard that gives us all of these ethnic sounds if we need it. The Thinker starts with a big, like an organ fugue, because, you know, give a composer the chance to think, and I start to write a D minor fugue. So, we're very fortunate to have some really fine artists.
How much time do you spend on this? I mean, how long did it take you to write the 40 minutes of music or whatever it is?
We started back in June, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. And he finally got the final piece a couple weeks ago.
I was going to say.
The very ending.
Yeah, but we worked through it. The intent of the final piece is in the finale. And, as the piece forms, what we're after is kind of evolving as well.
Well, set the stage for me at the very beginning of the piece, because, you know, lots of famous ballets have an overture, that kind of thing. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how that is handled in this piece. What is the audience going to see and hear?
Well, we start with the overture, and stage will be
the curtains open to a whole host of people walking around the museum and looking at artwork and things like that, and greeting each other, and people, a school group go across being guided by a teacher, and families, are all coming. And it's basically the dancers that are going to appear later. They're all part of this, which then turns into Florence's dream, if it is a dream, as it comes to life. And then they all gently vanish away, and then we go into fantasy land, which is all of the paintings coming to life.
Yeah. So the overture, does that play during the action, or does the overture play by itself and then?
Overture is a brief medley of some of the music they're about to hear, but I don't want to give too much away in the overture.
No, we
want some of the things to be surprises.
Yeah. Some of those musical bonbons, so to speak. Well, this performance is November 10th. That's a Friday at 7 p.m. And the following Saturday, November 11th at 2 p.m., it's at the Valentine Theater. You can find more information at ballettheaterofToledo.org, or you can use their phone number, 419-242-2787. It's called A Night Before Christmas at the Museum.
Yes, and if I can just add, this piece has no violence at all. This is happy, really entertaining for the whole family. So feel comfortable bringing everybody to this piece. It really is a piece that is going to make everybody...
It's a holiday gift.
It's a holiday gift, yeah.
So do these ballets that you write then go into repertory? Do you have them performed?
We keep them, yes, because we're bringing back in March The Great Pancake Escape. That's the story that Paul Manny wrote as a book, and David did the music, about a magician who mixes up his recipes with his spells, and all of his pancakes come to life.
Now, if you could take a bit of that and put it into the Christmas show, that'd be something else.
So we
look forward to that, sort of a Harry Potter meets Santa Claus.
Exactly.
Right? It's magical.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today, and I certainly look forward to that performance. I've been speaking with Nigel Burgoyne, who is Artistic Director of Ballet Theatre of Toledo, and David Jex, also a wonderful composer, who I guess has worked quite a bit with Nigel in the field of ballet in the past.
Nigel Burgoyne and David Jex, quite a pair.
Burgoyne and Jex.
Yes. Burgoyne and Jex. Yes,
it sounds like a comedy team.
Yeah.
A little bit. You have to work on that.
We have a lot of fun.
We do have a lot of fun, I honestly have to say that. And a lot of enjoyment and a great deal of creativity.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for coming in and spending some time with us here on FM 91.
Thank you for inviting
us. Nice to be on again. Thanks.